This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 298 of the Outlander podcast.
Oh, it's so Ginger. Close.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Good God, it's so close.
I know. We have to do something for episode number three. Episode 300. What should we do? Like a giveaway?
A giveaway? What are we going to give away?
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to, I don't know. We don't have like things, like things that aren't out yet. We could maybe rustle up like a season 4 soundtrack. We have I can't say giveaways. We have a lot more potential for giveaways later on this summer into fall, in which we're not going to give away yet. I'm not going to give away our potential giveaways because nothing is promised to us. We have hopes, but you never know. So we're not going to talk about the details. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe something like at least a season 4 soundtrack. Yeah, maybe a little mini bear package. Maybe a season 1 through 4 soundtrack. How does that sound?
That sounds kind of massive. Do people actually have
300? Hello? That sounds kind of massive. It takes 2 years to get. Wait, is it almost 6 years for us? Shoot. Shoot. Yes. 2019. So in just about 2 months, I think we started the podcast, like the idea conceptualizing, or I thought about it, whatever, in July 2013. And then I think we recorded in August 2013. If you go to Audio Boom and look at our first episode, it's going to be later than that because Summer and I had 2 episodes up over at Podbean before we were scouted.
Scouted.
I don't know.
Found. Scouted for the big leagues.
I did not say that. Before someone from Audio Boom scouted us and asked us to join Audio Boom. And we said, what you talking about with us? Anyway, no, we didn't. We said a few things. I had a conversation, and then we said, sure. And so we've been happy-dappy-doo-doo over at Audio Boom ever since. So that's why it may look like we're like a September starting, but actually I think it was like late August. But anyway, we're within like a hop, skip, and a jump distance of 6 years, Summer. Oh, my Lord. Not only is that a long time, it's also more than now we've tipped over into more than half a decade. Like, we're closer to 10 years than we are further from 10 years. And I don't want to borrow trouble, but holy Moses, if and when we are fortunate enough to get to 10 years, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know. That's down the road a little bit. But yeah, so announcements. I guess that was it. We're close to 300, which we've been saying for like the last 10 episodes. any ideas, Sam?
For the 10-year thing? No. Let's let 10 years happen.
I did not ask you. Yeah, I did not ask you that. bum, bum, bum. Anything happened with the show? No, sorry. I'm thinking of Discovery Witches. I'm like, they started filming. No, Ginger, that was wrong show. Anything recent?
I mean, it's raining a lot in Scotland.
Yeah. Funny that, huh?
Like all of the cast and crew are posting pictures on Instagram and stuff. Just them like Sam posted one, which was just of his boots.
The boots.
Yeah. The boots in the rain. And
it's funny. One of the members of our first Potterbot trip in 2018. To me, 2018, Lindsay, I hope she doesn't mind me sharing her name. There you go, Lindsay. You're overseas, so is right now in Scotland. She's on a UK trip, but she's in Scotland. And on all of her socials, she's sharing pictures of this and pictures of that. I commented, I think in our private group, but I was like, dang, but we get around. Like, it's one thing, you know, like our group went to Scotland together, did all these nice things, blah, 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 leaving dinner, da, 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 da. And then this year, when we were back on Potterbot 2019, after that, we had just enough time to have a quick welcome dinner, very kind of very informal compared to the leaving dinner, hi-bye kind of thing, like literally like 2.5 hours or something. before getting stuck on a train till almost midnight. That's a whole other story. Anyway,
that was a lot.
Because we never talked. We didn't talk about Potterbot at all this year. Because we kind of hit the ground running coming back. But anyway,
we were real tired.
Oh God, Ginger was real tired. Having to, we'll talk about that maybe later. But yeah, I'm totally fine if to talk about that. That's not a problem. But just not tonight. Anyway, so we go, and just before we come back, a very small group of our 2018 alumni. I mean, technically Latin alumni is correct. But anyway, alumni, maybe like, I think it was exactly seven of them, plus the same guide, Susan Brown, Eyes on Scotland, and Scotland Your Way. We met up, had a quick and dirty dinner, I guess. And then we went back up north to meet our family, and they left on their trip to their second. It was our first, the first alumni tour. Yeah. And anyway, so ever since then, I swear, so many people, like Lindsay went last year, right? And then she couldn't go this year because she was doing something else. And then,
because she's already there now.
Now she's there. Like,
she couldn't go on the alumni tour and go back there a month later.
Do you know what else Lindsay's doing, if I'm not mistaken? Going to All Souls Con. So, girlfriend, she's going twice. We're going twice. It's just crazy town. And you want to know what's even funnier? And I know this is a different show and a different podcast, but we hope you listen. That's over at allsoulspod.com. All Souls Con is in Wales this year. And Summer and I are going to represent, well, just as fans, first and foremost, but also to represent our podcast. And there are so many people who we know who are going there again, who went to Scotland. It's just like this mad, amazing troop of women, and some of them, you know, bring their husbands along, are just like, it's a small world, I guess. It's just amazing. Like, we just get back from Scotland, look up, and like, there's one of our alumni going to the UK again. And I look up, and it's like, in every month or three, it's like one of our group is back over there. And even if it's not from our group, it's someone we've met through the show, like people we're friends with on Facebook, or I'm friends with on Facebook. It's like everyone. But I mean, it's not a, if you have a common interest of travel and you're an Anglophile, or you are a fan of Scotland or Outlander, you know, it makes sense that you'd either want to go or that you would go. You know, really good friend of mine and Summers, someone that we know, both of us know, just got back from 2 weeks in Ireland. And it's like, this whole place is bursting with international travel. And I just think it's amazing. And it definitely is a blessing to be able to go, because it's, you know, it's not always, you can do it, I don't know, on the cheap. You can do it for less money, but it's definitely a luxury. It's not a need, but wow. So if you would like to join our information, or I guess interest list, just please go ahead and send us an email at hello@outlanderpod.com, and we will add you to that. We don't have any information as of yet, but likely we will be setting up dates in the next, definitely by the end of the year, but probably more close to the early fall, because the summer is, you know, I think just crazy busy for our team in general.
And now let's move on to our read along. This week we are continuing our The Fiery Cross read along. We are beginning part
7-3
in shut up. It's not part 7. Part 3, entitled Alarms and Excursions, and Chapter 26, The Militia Rises.
And they're off.
I think the subtitle should be, And Jamie Gets a Cold.
Well, there's a lot of things. Well, I mean, a lot of potential subtitles, yeah. And they're off. So they had a decent number of people, actually, like almost 40 men. And of course, Claire. And even Fergus went with them to help. I kept wanting to write, like just now I even wanted to say it, but I kept wanting to type the word attract. I don't mean physically attract the men. I mean go out and help bring in the men and encourage them to join. Although, you know, if anyone, heck, I find Fergus cute. So there's no shame in any Fergus game or other people's liking Fergus game. I don't know. hey, I don't know. So on the way, as they're going from, well, they are collecting the guys as they go along, or I guess they finished collecting them, and then that's what they got. They got 40 dudes plus Claire. On the way to their, not a rendezvous?
Could be a rendezvous. I mean, they're all just meeting, right?
Yeah. I forget the name of the place. I have it later on in my notes. The place where they have been asked to go or ordered to go by Governor Tryon. On the way to that place, the plan is that Jaime would conduct military drills to train those who had no military experience. And it turns out about half of them had military experience and the other half did not. Claire is cooking corn dodgers, and this corn dodger or set of corn dodgers, like, were around for like a little bit more, maybe more than half the chapter. I was like, dang, it made me start started making me think about corn dodgers. And that made me think about Alex.
Have you ever had a corn dodger?
I have.
They're kind of like
hardtack.
No, they're more like fried cornbread.
Oh, you know, when I think about a corn dodger, I think about a corn dog without the meat in the middle. Is it like that bread that's fried? Like that dough?
Well, it's called, let me double check. Corn dodger.
So what I thought, besides what it looks like, is that you look that up and I will go look at the Outlander Kitchen book right now.
Okay. So it is a small, hard, fried, or baked cornmeal cake. So she was frying hers in lard. I remember that she was talking about the lard flavor in it. But corn dodgers, yeah, it's like fried cornbread. Or like hush puppies are a type of corn dodger. But hush puppies have a lot more stuff in them. Let's see. Corn dodgers. These easy-to-make cornmeal cakes were popular with Civil War soldiers and pioneers heading west. Most recipes yield dense, gritty, and hard-as-brick cakes. So they probably are the corn version of hardtack.
I was just totally throwing that out there. So I looked at...
Because, well, that way they'll last. Because if they're too soft...
Now, I looked at Teresa Carl Sanders' Outlander Kitchen cookbook. And I just went straight to the index because for me that's faster because alphabetical. And I looked up under C. And basically it says corn muffins. The only corn thing... Other things have corn in them, but the only name of a recipe is corn with corn. That's the first word, is corn muffins. So since she covers the first, what, six books? Five books?
I think it covers at least the first few because there's – no, even more because doesn't she have a Mrs. Bug recipe in there somewhere?
Yeah, and I also saw, looking up corn, a reference to A Breath of Snow and Ashes, which is book six. So Fiery Cross – apple fritters, coddled egg for Duncan, corn muffins, gingerbread and fresh crud, Governor Tryon's humble crumble, apple pie, Marsley's beef, Mrs. Bug's buttermilk drop biscuits, potato fritters, Roger and Bree's pizza, Rosamond's pulled pork with devil's apple, scotch eggs, dopey potatoes, sweet potato pie, and Ulysses syllabub. So there is no corn dodger. Doesn't mean it may not make it, but nothing official. And I don't know why. Maybe it didn't make the cut, but that may be, you know, maybe it's something she's saving. But yeah, now that I read that, okay, so hold on. Breath of Snow and Ashes is book six. Book seven is An Echo in the Bone. Let me see if there's any reference to that. No, there's not. So I think it was one through six. And the next book will be, there's only two more. So it could be seven and eight or... Yeah, I don't know what else we cover, but certainly she has plenty of material. I am confident. So yeah, I am curious about a recipe for corn dodgers. And what do you guys think about them? Have you ever had them, Sam?
Corn dodgers? No, I've had lots of Southern-esque things. I've had hush puppies that are kind of like corn dodgers.
You remember that restaurant, Po' Folks?
I do.
Me too. So
did you? Did you have something else to say about that?
Or I just remember that. It? So the big worry, apparently, is not the men's shooting ability or lack thereof, but rather they're not running at the sound of gunfire. So kind of like horses. And as soon as I was reading that passage, I thought, oh, Lene! I mean.
I almost had her come tonight.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she's going to come next week.
Oh, I'm so glad that we can share that here live with you listeners because Ginger didn't know. The plan is to teach them, the men, the 40, to fight as, or the men who couldn't fight. So about half of them couldn't fight. The ones who, actually, probably even the ones who could shoot, but at least especially the ones who can't shoot very well. The plan is to teach them to fight as Highlanders do, to gather or scatter at his, Jamie's, word. The good thing is that they can all hunt. So if they did have to scatter and basically go hide themselves, make themselves scarce for safety's sake, they could, and they'd be able to survive in the wilderness for a time. Except Roger. Roger hadn't shot anything. Jamie told Claire that Roger would be better hitting game over the head with a musket rather than shooting at it.
And he said all of that with Roger.
Right there.
Right there.
Exactly. Claire points out, she's like, look, if there is a battle, it won't be like hunting at all. The regulators aren't soldiers and they won't be trying to kill them, only to scare them. But Jamie says, you know, with his experience, you're right, but you're also wrong. War is killing because the game, meaning when you're hunting game isn't trying to kill you.
It depends on the game. I'm pretty sure that there were some bears that tried to kill them as well.
But I don't think they were hunting the bear. That wasn't hunting.
Well, the bear was hunting them. Yeah.
Claire brings us back to Earth by reminding the reader that whatever does happen with the regulators, it won't be all-out war. Roger relays to her what he'd told Jamie about the coming revolution, and he thinks that he may have scared him a bit, and therefore thinks that Jamie was trying to scare him in return. Claire talks about her time as a field combat nurse in World War II, and she says that Jamie was an officer, and that in her experience, it was the officers that couldn't sleep at night. Quote, yes, you scared him. He doesn't want to weep for you. Neither do I. It may not be now, but when the time does come, take care, will you? Unquote. Blurg. Claire thinks of her wars, the ones she's nursed at, and she knows that disease as well as injury or gunfire will kill more as well. So she adds that to the fear. It's not just a fear of getting hit or getting, you know, yeah, hit with something or attacked. It's also the fear of disease. They chug on. Quote, several of the men wanted to push on to reach the hamlet of Brownsville. Brownsville was the outer point of our journey before turning back toward Salisbury, and it held the possibility of a pothouse or at least a hospitable shed to sleep in, but Jamie thought it better to wait, unquote. So the reason I quoted that was not because I could have just said they're on their way to Brownsville. Jamie said no. The reason I quoted this was because I think it's the first mention of Brownsville. I think. I could be wrong. I did not do a search in the book. Definitely, it's mentioned twice in like two sentences. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Remember Brownsville. So Jamie, when it comes to Brownsville, he doesn't want to arrive at night and like give them a scare. He'd rather arrive by daylight. And then as far as like recruiting more men, give the men the day and that night to get ready. Now, Jamie, as Summer was mentioning earlier, is ill and he's coughing quite heavily, and he's wheezing. He just sounds really gross. They set up camp for the night, and it was a very cold night. And there's a decent sized passage about how Claire is serving up the stew, and then after she's done, because she's facing the fire as she's serving it out, and then when she's done, she turns around and she warms her backside because it's cold, but she was like burning up because she was so close to it, facing it. So Claire's nose begins to run, but it's only due to the cold or perhaps eating something hot, she thinks and hopes. And she tells Jamie that she has vasomotor rhinitis. And he responds by looking suspiciously into the forest and saying, where? I thought they lived in Africa. And then, this made me laugh too, and then come the two Glaswegians from the forest, where I presume they'd done a lookout. They were out, like, on the lookout, like they were walking the perimeter. The men talk about the cold and the heat and about how not to have your shoes burned. Can you imagine being so cold that you're trying to, well, I guess it's two things. Number one, it's cold. Number two, you have, like, I guess, I won't say shoddy, because even these days, I'm sure well-made shoes, anything gets close enough to fire and it can melt or burn. Fair enough. But they're so cold that they sleep close to the fire, or at least their boots do, or their shoes do, their feet do. And they get so close, slash their shoes are so poorly made, or so the material is so fragile, not very strong, or I don't want to say cheap, but, you know, raw, I guess, that you lose part of your shoes. Some of the men are mourning lost hair and point out that Roger is very hairy.
Then Richard was very well cast.
Completely. So what about you, Sam? Are you heads or tails?
What does that mean?
Jamie and Claire laid down like a little bit away from the group, right? But before they go over and make their palette, someone asked Jamie, heads or tails? And it was the discussion was, as I gleaned, like, when you sleep, would you want to have someone's head next to your head or someone's feet next to your head? Like, how do you want to line up with someone? Like, if you were in a bed.
Is this a conversation about how you and I are going to be sleeping at Comic-Con?
Oh, Lord. You and I.
Because I think.
We always do head to head.
Yeah, maybe we should change that.
No,
this
because
year.
Then one of us is gonna
maybe
or
we
both
should
of us
try.
Gonna kick the other in the face. No, we're not changing anything.
So then I guess we're head to head. I guess it also depends on how stinky the feet are.
Well, okay, let's take it out of the bed situation. Let's take about like say you're with a friend.
Here's the thing, though. You realize your privates still line up.
No. That's what I'm saying. Taking it out of the bed situation. Say you.
No, I said I'm taking it out of the bed situation. But even if you go head to tails, head to head or head to tails,
next to each other. I'm saying don't be next to each other. You're going to be, say, in a line. Would you want your feet to feet or your head to feet or head to head? Say you're in a circle. You know what I mean? How do you want? You can't control others, but what would you want?
I don't know. I don't understand what you're asking.
Head to foot, whatever, all around. Would you want your head to be next to someone's foot or facing someone's head?
It would depend on the feet and it would depend on the head. And also, my theory that I was stating is still accurate, because regardless of if you go head to tail or head to head, your privates still line up.
If you're in a bed and
yes,
if your bodies are next to each other, you are right. No matter how you do it, your privates line up. If you are in like a line from one end of the room to the other in a straight line, nobody's privates are lined up, unless you mean a straight line. No one's privates are next to each other.
Yes, they are.
Okay, you got to draw me this line, because this is not making sense.
Okay, regardless of how you flip them, if you flipped them, every other person, head to tail, head up, head down, head up, head down, head up, head down, head up, head down. The privates are all in the middle of their bodies. The middle of their bodies are still lined up.
I'm not saying in a line of bodies in a row. I'm talking about a bodies end to end. So someone's head is head. Okay, if I'm on the end of a line, right, and my head's on the end and my feet are at my other end, and you put your head next to my feet and your feet away from me, we're in a straight line.
That's weird, and that provides no one warmth.
No, I get that. I'm just saying that's what I was saying. And if you're around in a circle, you might do that. So that's why I was saying heads or tails. Because in the other way, I agree. If you're side to side in any way, privates are lined up, and that's kind of mm-mm. But we're not going to talk about privates lining up because we're not sleeping together at Comic-Con. That's all I'm going to say. Claire... she's talking about Jamie, of course, but she mentions some comment referring to the baboons at King Louis in France when they were in Paris in Dragonfly and Amber. She mentions about sleeping. Okay, no, I don't even know. I wrote Claire on sleeping with head baboon. So I don't even know. Head is a butt. I remember the book and I remember their conversation, but I can't put it succinctly into a sentence.
Well, you apparently tried.
No, that's why I stopped. Jamie has her remove her breeks. I mean, she does part of it and he does the rest of it-ish later. Roger thinks of singing and okay. And this is when Claire finishes going breakless. So as I said, they set up their little cot, their little bedding away, a little bit away from the fire. And so at least their own sleeping place is slightly private. Claire makes as they were describing it, as she described it, Claire makes a pretty good bed. I was like, oh, that's kind of, especially with having a Jamie in there, that sounds kind of comfy. Jamie senses that there's something in the woods. And he kind of walks away, checks it out a little bit, comes back and says, whatever it was, it's gone. But he has set two guards with pistols loaded to stand guard that night. And then Jamie and Claire get naked under the blankets.
I just can't imagine that being my chosen thing to do.
Well, especially when it's so cold.
And it's cold. Why? Now, I will say that you do, if there are blankets and if they're warm blankets, you do share body heat better if it's two naked bodies. Because then you can physically share each other's heat as opposed to if you're both wearing sweatpants and sweatshirts. Then you're both cold. But
yeah, I can't imagine being in this makeshift camp and being like, let's just take everything off
with everyone around and sleep under the blankets naked. That just does not sit with me.
I mean, with Jamie maybe, but most likely no. So Claire wakes up a little bit later and she needs to pee. She's like, this is not going to wait till morning. And as she's walking through the camp, she grabs a canteen of water to take back to Jamie. And Jamie actually, after she finishes and she's on her way back, Jamie actually appears next to her. And just as she asks him how he's doing, quote, there was a crunch and flurry among the leaves. I saw Murdo start up by the fire, musket in hand, and then a dark shape dashed past me, unquote. Claire smacks it in the back with her canteen and they fall. After this, there's general mayhem and someone comes plowing into Claire. By the time she gets up, the intruder has been caught. And the dude was coughing and hacking. And Jamie knew him. It was Josiah Beardsley, the future tonsillectomy patient of Claire's. So he is wheezing and having a hard time breathing. He's very congested. Claire has her coffee brought to her immediately to give to the dude. She walks him through some breathing, helping him drink, like take a sip and then exhale, inhale, exhale, that kind of thing. Small and thin, his black hair cut short and matted with dirt and grime. I mean, this dude has been like, it sounds like, what's that? It's not a show. It's a movie. Well, it's an animated. I'm thinking of the animated classic, but it was a book first. The dude who was raised in the jungle, Jungle Book, Mowgli. What?
You're like, I'm thinking of that book, that dude that was raised in the jungle.
I have to get there, Summer. Jamie then begins to interrogate him. This, I don't know why this made me laugh. No, Josiah Beardsley did not come to join the militia. He just happened to be there.
Do you know what? I was thinking a lot about the Beardsleys over the last few weeks, just because, you know, they started filming again. And the girl who plays Lizzie, I saw a picture of her someplace. And I was thinking to myself, she's clearly not Lizzie's age in the book Lizzie age. She's older, which means that the Beardsleys will also have to be older, which means that Jamie wouldn't want them for the same reason that he wants them in the book, because in the book he wanted them because they were good hunters and they were 14. So they were under the required age for being forced into the militia.
They could still be hunters.
No, they can still be hunters, but it wouldn't have the same
effect.
They don't have the same get out of war free card.
We'll have to see. Lizzie, I agree. I don't think Lizzie. I don't know if it's just because of her height or what, but I also don't think Lizzie appears 14 or acts 14. I mean, she acts like a young lady or young woman. But yeah, I don't think she looks 13 or 14 or acts 13 or 14 necessarily. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. I think it'll be very interesting to see what they do and how they do it. And I don't know what article I was reading or blurb I was reading. This is no inside information. Maybe it was something someone was quoting from the literary forum, which Diana on CompuServe, or the former CompuServe, that Diana still frequents. And that is something, and I don't know I don't remember the detail of what the conversation or scenes were about, but the conclusion that was being drawn, or that Diana seemed to be giving, although I don't think it was her words, is that to make some things fit or to adjust some things, or for the sake of, I don't even know brevity, but for the sake of kind of, I guess, moving the story, keeping it moving. And we've already seen this. It's nothing new. But for that sake, whatever that is, they will likely continue to bring things, I can't say forward. I guess on the one hand, you can look at it as moving the story forward sooner than it otherwise would have been, according to the books, or not equal with the books. Or you can look at it as taking something that happens later and pulling it back. You know what I mean? It depends on how you look at it. Moving the story forward a little bit, but staying still mostly true to that book, or bringing something in from a future book, moving that back a bit or up, as in further or earlier. Anyway, it just reminded me that, you know, we don't know. Absolutely, I agree with you. I am very curious to see how the Beardsleys will be cast, how the Beardsleys will fit, what they'll be like. Yeah, I can't say anything right now because we're not there yet, but I'm still curious. And we don't find out until book 6, I don't think. But I'm still curious to see if the Beardsleys from the books are the Beardsleys from the books, if you know what I'm saying. Double the trouble. That's all. I'm wondering if they're going to keep that, because that is hysterical. So Jamie begins to interrogate him. Josiah did not come to join the militia. He just happened to be there. Jamie knows this was the presence that he'd sensed earlier in the wood. And Jamie pulled the landlord card and demands to know the truth. He says he promised, Josiah says he'd promised to come in the new year, and he will. Until then, his affairs are his own business. And Jamie's like, yo, respect, dude. I can't complain about that. I was surprised that Jamie, I mean, he was absolutely right, but I was surprised, like, he got away with it that easily, you know? I was just like, okay, you got a head on your shoulders, dude. Jamie offers, he's like, is there anything I can do? And Josiah's like, nope. And then Roger tries. Very observant, Roger. Quote, this business of yours, it's not by any means connected to that mark on your thumb, unquote. At this, Josiah drops the coffee cup and runs off. And Jamie runs after him. Now, they're gone for, I don't even know, like hours. But I thought it was funny. I can imagine he drops the coffee cup. It bounces off of something. And Claire has coffee like all over her darn face. Like as she's talking to Roger, as I wiped coffee from my eyebrow. Oh, she's funny.
Both of them. It was eyebrows.
Oh, Lord. So,
yep. She says the cup hit the ground and the coffee splashed up, spattering my face and bodice. Like,
that's a lot of coffee.
It bypassed her skirts.
Yep.
And went straight for her face.
So Roger says he was pretty sure it was a letter T that he'd seen on his thumb. The young man, Josiah, the boy, had been branded a thief. So I'm guessing T is for thief. But the problem was that it wasn't necessarily the fact that he had.
Oh, that's not what T is for. T is for twin.
Oh, Summer.
I'm just kidding. It's for thief.
But the problem was not that he was branded, because Jamie was going to honor his promise to this young man. The problem was that he ran when it was mentioned. So he was trying to hide it. It's, as I said, it's hours. It's a hot minute or seven before Jamie comes back. Now, Claire has memories of their first meeting with a young John Gray. And we get a little flashback to the scene in Carriarrick just before Prestonpans. Now, make that 87 hot minutes. It's a ding dong long time. Hey, that rhymed. Claire dozes off, wakes up, and as she's sitting in front of the fire, like she's, you know, sitting up, trying to stay awake, and her head kind of goes forward, and then it knocks back up when it gets starts to fall on her neck, until Roger lowers her down to the ground and to actually sleep. She wakes up when Jamie sneezes near her, and she sees that he's got Josiah's hand in one of his hands and his dirk in the other. Now, as she watches, she feels something curled against her. It was a young boy. I'm like, dang, but it's raining young boys tonight. Gracious, they're coming out of everywhere. So back at the fire, she sees Jamie pressing Josiah's thumb against the metal of the hot dirk. Josiah makes no noise. She touches the boy near her, and he wakes. He gets up to start to leave, and then he sees his brother. They were brothers, all right, at the fire, and stops. They were identical twins.
See, T is
Claire
for twins.
Believes it might have been food that he'd stolen. And of course, whenever I hear about stealing food and that, what do I think of? 2, 4, 6, 0, 1. Yes.
That was the most un-Valjean version.
It was the...
I've ever heard. Nope, you're good.
That was the best version ever, Ginger. Yeah, that's what you get me to shut up.
I'm just saying, that was like the opposite of Valjean.
So Jamie had, what he had done was cut off the top of his thumb, the pad of his thumb, I guess, to remove the brand. And then he branded him, seared it,
cauterized it.
Thank you. Burned it to seal it, I guess. That sounds weird. She doctors it the best she can, and then the two boys disappear into the woods. Into the woods. Jamie coughs. I mean, like, not just like, but like a nasty cough. Like,
he's sick.
He's,
I told you.
Crazy sick. So she tries to get Jamie to go back to sleep for the precious little rest he could still get before morning, and he says, quote, not worth it. And besides, I've got to think what the hell to do now, unquote. So I was wondering, what do you think that he meant? Is this related to the long drawn out conversation that he had with the Beardsley dude or dudes in the woods before he came back? Because we know they were gone and they had some kind of stuff that we don't know about yet. They had some kind of conversation. Because why would, unless something they said changed something or added something to his plate, right? Why would that affect what they're doing? Like, they already have a plan. The plan is to train the militia, get here for try. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he means by, I've got to think what the hell to do now?
Well, I mean, there's two of them.
Oh, the two. Yeah, but all that means is they have two hunters.
Well, he has to think of what to do about the Beardsleys. If he was stealing food, but, you know, is he a thief? Does that make him not trustworthy because he's been, you know, stealing? And he was branded for being a thief. I mean,
yes.
he has to consider
I agree.
Those things.
I agree. But he can, the Beardsley dude and now dude.
And they're on their way to war.
That's
what are they
my
supposed
point.
To do?
That is my point. Let's say you're right. So the Beardsleys, he's this thief. And a lot of people didn't necessarily see the T on him. So he can probably hide that, the fact that he removes something. But he has to, you know, he has to come to terms with the fact that it may be known or may get out. And then how is he going to rectify that? Or, you know, with openly, knowingly having other tenants aware of the fact that he knowingly accepted, right, thieves among them. So I can see that being a thing. I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? How am I going to handle this? I get it. I agree. However, I don't think that that is something he has to worry about it. But that is not on his plate right now. On his mind, maybe. That's not his job right now. The Beardsleys aren't supposed to come back till Christmas or the New Year, basically. So he has got a month or ish to worry about that once they get through the skirmish and hopefully they survive at whatever the skirmish is or isn't. So what I'm saying is, why at the end? Because Claire says, come on, let's get some sleep. She wants him to get some sleep. The last chance he has to get before the morning. And he's like, I can't. I have to think what the hell I'm going to do now. And Jamie's a smart cookie. We know this. He he's human. He can compartmentalize. If what just happened or what just, you know, the conversation went down that we're not privy to yet, somehow it had to affect. Well, this is what I get. And I'm not saying I'm right, but this is what it makes me think of. When he says to Claire, no, I'm not going to sleep because I got to think what the hell we're going to do now. That's making me think he can't waste time sleeping because it affects their militia stuff.
The answer to your question is literally at the beginning of the next chapter. And it is absolutely about the Beardsleys.
Oh, Lord. Is it the nasty chapter?
Maybe. There's lots of questions, but yeah,
it is Beardsley related.
And yes, I promise, dear listener, dear reader, I have read these books before, but I do not, as you can tell, you can totally tell I'm honest here. I don't read ahead. Or literally, as Summer said, I would have probably had part of my answer. Okay, Semalama Ding Dong.
All right. Well, that was chapter 26. Join us next week when we will be discussing chapter 27 entitled Death Comes Calling. And we will be joined by a friend of the show, Miss Lene.
Horsey woman. Yes, Neruzu.
And see, I'm putting it out there now, so now she can't back out.
Ha! Does Lene listen weekly? I don't know if she listens weekly. I know listens, but I don't know if she listens weekly. So Lene will, if you don't listen, then that's okay, but I will be on your case. I will be sending you links and all that. And yes, I look forward to that, Lene.
Why are you going to say it like that? What is wrong with you?
What?
Do you use your creepy NPR voice?
Summer, it's not creepy NPR.
I am looking forward to that, Lene.
Oh, God.
That's exactly how you just said that.
Let's wrap it up.
And there's still time to join in and be a part of the conversation with our read-along. If you go to www.outlanderpod.com/fierycross, that will take you to our Facebook event page where we have a link to the spreadsheet, which will show you the available chapters. And there will be new chapters going up shortly for the next section.
That's right. I got to get moving on that. So please join us in that capacity because we have so many chapters left that are available for your taking, for the taking. We'd also love to have you visit us and join our Facebook community to continue the conversation. And you can do so at outlanderpod.com/group. And we want to ask you to please subscribe to the Outlander podcast in your favorite podcatcher, in your favorite app. There's tons out there. There's Apple Podcasts. There's Google Podcasts. There's my favorite, Castro. There's Overcast. You can listen in Spotify. You can listen in iHeartRadio. There are so many ways to listen or so many apps to listen through. And the reason I say subscribe in whatever your app of choice is because you can absolutely go find us each week. But if you subscribe, you don't have to do anything. It will download to your device or to your app of choice. So please subscribe to the Outlander podcast in your favorite app, and we will be in your ears every week without you having to lift a finger. And finally, as I said at the beginning of the episode, we would love to have you join our interest list for Pod Abroad 2021. So thank you guys as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode with friend of the show, Lene. Let's see how many mentions we can get in there because now she really, 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 really can't back out. Okay, love you, Lene. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.